Welcome to the Misfit Stars podcast. I'm Shannon Curtis.
And I'm Jamie Hill. Hello, listeners.
Hello, friends.
Dear listeners. Very dear listeners. Hi, Shannon.
Hi, Jamie.
Nice to see you.
You too.
As though we don't see each other literally all the time.
Every day, all day.
I was outside today spontaneously weeding, and it was the longest you and I have been probably not in the same room for, I don't know, 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Pretty cool. I missed you, but it was okay. I came back in, had dinner, it worked out. So, hi, people. It's nice to have you with us. Later on in this episode, we are going to be talking about imagining our future. Right? It's a thing we can do. It's hard to remember sometimes, especially in a time like this, but it's a thing we can do. We're going to talk about it.
Yeah.
But before that, the preamble. Misfit Stars is a community-centered endeavor, and we would like, as always, to invite you to join us. Misfit Stars is a podcast. You're listening to it. We hope you love it. If it's your first time listening, by the way, welcome. I'm always just so amazed at like how many people listen to the podcast each week. It's just weird to me.
We're so glad you're here. It tickles us that you listen.
Yeah, it really does. We are tickled. And thank you for tickling us in that way. Misfit Stars... That was weird. It's also...
So sorry.
Yeah. Misfit Stars is also a patron support community, right? So it's a way that people support the work that Shannon and I do in the world. There's a lot of different things we do. A lot of it is music-based. A lot of it is community-based. A lot of it is at the intersection of the two.
Some of it is podcast-based.
Yeah, that's true. Really, I mean, I feel like the podcast is the intersection of the music and the community,
yeah,
kind of.
Okay, sure.
But
sure.
It's a totally different thing.
Yeah.
But that's sort of how we thought of it. But it's taken on life of its own, like things do.
Things do.
Point being, if you like the work that Shannon and I do in the world, you can help continue to make it possible. No joke, our Misfit Stars patron community is the reason that Shannon and I are not living in a cardboard box down by the river right now, to paraphrase Chris Farley. Seriously, y'all's support has made it possible for us to continue in this time of pandemic.
Yeah.
Without y'all, we wouldn't be in really a good situation at all. And we're doing okay. You know, we're not wealthy. We're carrying some debt. but we're going to be okay.
Yeah.
And being okay is the point right now. That's fine. Being okay is an okay baseline.
Y'all are making that possible.
Yeah. Thank you. Sincerely. It's humbling and it's amazing. And if you are listening to this and you're one of those people, well, thanks. That's you. Thank you. We love you. And if you're listening to this and you're not yet one of those people.
But you want to be one of those people?
You could be. Maybe you don't know that you want to be one of those people. Let me give you like a 10-second pitch.
Okay.
You can help us continue doing good things in the world and you can signal boost our messages.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're doing when you throw your lot in with ours, when you become a supporting member, which by the way, you can do at misfitstars.com/join. You're enabling us to devote ever more time to doing things that don't take money, but put good into the world. I, for example, over the last 6 months have dramatically increased my mentorship of other artists.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't charge any of them for it. It's just a thing that I can do to help other people put mm-hmm. good things into the world without it having to cost them money. I have literally decades at this point, strangely, of experience in producing and engineering records. And I can just teach it to people one-on-one. I had this amazing hour-long conversation just on the phone about 2 hours ago with this 19-year-old kid who I'm mentoring. I taught him all about different kinds of EQ today.
Mm-hmm.
We just had a spontaneous little session. We got on the phone and we opened up Logic together. And I just walked him through some advanced settings on some of the tools there. And he had his mind blown and he's all excited. And it's great. And I can do that with a lot of people because of the support of this group.
Yes. And you've also been
that
expanding.
That was longer than 10 seconds, by
it's
the
okay.
way.
Yeah. Time is irrelevant.
It's true.
You've also been able to increase the amount of projects that you're working on, that you're able to work on for free for other artists as well.
Above and beyond mentoring, just actually doing the work that I do.
Exactly. Yeah. The Misfit Stars community is making that possible.
Yeah.
So thank you.
It's really, really neat. I have two records that I'm going to be mastering this week that I mentored the person all the way through the recording and then I mixed it myself in one case, mentored the guy through the mixing himself in the other case, and then I'm doing the mastering for both of them. We're going to end up with finished albums that didn't cost the artist a dime.
It's so good.
To get my ears on them, which I think is nifty.
It's really nifty.
Yeah.
And also, when you join the Misfit Stars community, you get stuff in return too, mostly in the form of being part of this wonderful community of people, of really wonderful people.
And it's not just an abstract thing. You get to actually literally be in a place with these people.
We have a private Facebook group where these folks exist online. It's been so fun to see how folks within the community who don't live anywhere near each other, who wouldn't have met if not for this mutual connection, but I see them starting to form like relationships with each other. And it's
amazing.
Wonderful.
It's really amazing.
Yeah. So it's a really great place to be. Come join us at misfitstars.com/join. Mm-hmm. It's a small dollar. It starts at $5 a month to be part of this effort.
That's like 17 cents a day, people. I rounded up from 16.67 and I assumed a 30-day month, but the math basically holds.
Thank you. So that was way longer than a 10-second commercial pitch, but
it was good.
Worth
though.
It. Definitely
real worth
it.
So listener, now that I've convinced you, just take hit pause. Just go to misfitstars.com/join and get signed up. We could use it. You'd feel great.
Yeah.
And that's that. So thanks, people.
How are you feeling today, Jamie?
You know, better now that we're doing the podcast, frankly. I've been at like a 6 out of 10 today.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of middling gray place where I'm not technically bad. I think that bad is 4 out of 10 or below, you know?
Yeah.
I'm just mediocre today. Thanks.
Yeah, that's
you know
okay.
what I mean? I woke up, I've been having weird dreams pretty consistently. I had them again last night. Woke up with a very strange song in my head from like 20 years ago in my life that was very bittersweet feeling. Mm. A song I wrote, actually. And it was written in a bittersweet way at a very bittersweet time in my life. I had just ended my 8-year relationship with my college girlfriend. Mm-hmm. That started when I was like, you know, 18 and ended when I was 26. Mm-hmm. It was such a formative relationship and I ended it. And it's, you know, we weren't the right people for each other. And she and I have reconnected as adults. And I still think that's true. You know what I mean? Like she's such a wonderful woman. And I'm so glad she's in the world and exists. And I feel honored to have gotten to spend some time with her. Mm-hmm. But like, I don't think we were the right people for each other. Mm. I didn't break up with her probably at the time for the right reasons or in the right way. You know what I mean?
Sure, like, that was pre-sobriety for you
I had
and all
just
that. Yeah.
All kinds of other shit I had to take care of.
Yeah.
And most of it not good, you know? But you know,
so the song
was about that time period and about her and about that breakup.
Yeah.
And it got me thinking about that, you know? And I've processed it due to the miracle of the amends process. I've actually had the opportunity to sit face to face with her and talk this stuff through with her like 20
right.
years after it happened, which was an amazing gift.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's cool. I carry no shame about it. I don't exactly carry regret. I don't know. I don't know what. It's just one of those things that it was hard to process this morning because I wasn't exactly sure what it was that I was feeling because I like interrogated myself. I'm like, am I feeling shame? Well, no, I've got no reason to feel shame about any of this. That's not what I'm feeling. Like, do I feel regret? It feels like regret, but I'm not certain what I would be regretting because everything I've done in my life has led me to where I am and my life is good now. And so, you know, no regrets, no regrets. Neck tattoo. you know, no regrets. But there was the feeling I was feeling was something like that. And I spent a lot of time today trying to figure out what it was and results came up inconclusive.
Interesting.
And I also kind of moved past it too. Like it's no longer actively on my mind, but the feeling lingers a little bit, you know?
Sure.
So that's okay. I did a little processing today and that was fine. I've just had one of those days where I just can't get out of freaking second gear. You know what I mean? Like I've been doing things all day and I'm sure I have been productive.
Yeah.
But it just feels like I've been swatting flies and haven't accomplished any of the things I actually intended. Like I wanted to work on music today. It's not going to happen.
No.
I've been awake for many, many, many hours and indeed opened a session of something, but then like other things happen.
Right. I have good news for you.
What?
You will end this day having recorded a podcast. That's something you can check the mark next to that one.
It's true. It's good. That is good. It's a thing that needs to happen. I'm happy to do it.
Yeah.
And I feel good when I am doing it. So I don't know. I'm okay. I'm not bad technically.
Yeah.
I'm also not good. You know how like there's different like you can say like I'm in my early 30s. When you're 30, 31, 32, and 33 probably, right? But
okay.
You can't say you're in your early 30s when you're 34. That's not true.
That's
you're in your mid-30s.
Mid-30s. Uh-huh.
34, 35, 36 really is mid-30s.
Okay.
And 37, 38, 39 is late 30s. So you can't really be like, I'm in my mid-30s when you're 37. That's not true because
no.
You're in the last sort of thing.
I'm so curious where you're going with this.
Well, I think there's a similar kind of scale for like, are you doing good, mediocre, or bad?
Okay.
I'm like a 6 out of 10. Bad would be, I'd say, 1 through 4.
One through three, really.
One through
okay.
three. Because there's no zero in this. So yeah, this is nicer because it's almost more like, you know, it's even threes.
Okay.
So like,
but
tens on the other end. So one through three would be bad.
Okay.
That's like the low end.
Okay.
And then 4, 5, 6 would be, that's kind of where I am. And then like 7, 8, 9, and 10 is good.
Okay.
7's like the low end of good. 10 is great.
Yeah, okay.
So, you know, I'm on the numbers. you know.
I like it.
My statistical analysis, numerical analysis of how I'm doing today is meh.
If your mood were the air quality index, would you be green, yellow, orange, or red?
I'd be a firm yellow. Yeah. Not dangerous, but you don't want to stay in it longer than you have to.
Also, can we talk a little bit about how I'm resentful of the fact that we've had to become so intimate with the air quality index?
We've been learning so many fucked up things this year. You know, seriously, 2020 is like the year of learning stuff you wish you didn't know.
Totally.
All of it. You know what I mean?
Yes. Hey,
I don't want to know what a fomite is. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Screw this stupid year.
Yes. Oh, I have news for you. It's not the year. So
how are you doing, by the way?
I'm fine.
Did you have more things you wanted to say before you get into that?
No, sure, I can transition into that. But like speaking of the AQI, the Air Quality Index, I'm happy to report that finally did break here. Yeah. And we got relief and we were able to go outside and breathe the air.
We can be outdoors again, people.
We can breathe the air and not, you know, be pulling toxic fumes into our lungs, which
is
amazing.
For people not
living
on the West Coast, they're like, what do you mean? You just go outdoors, the door's right there. No, you couldn't, people. It was poison. The air was poison.
Couldn't do it. So, you know,
we can do it now.
The fact of that actually is contributing to me feeling pretty great. Like, to look outside and not see brown haze, you know, to look outside and see just, you know, normal Pacific Northwest clouds.
Yeah, it's great.
Hallelujah.
Hell, just to see the house across the street clearly.
Totally.
That's nice.
So it's contributing to a real uptick in my mood. How am I feeling today? You know, pretty good. We spent some time volunteering. We're going to talk about that later.
Mm-hmm.
Doing phone banking today. And that always makes me feel good.
Yeah.
I spent some time listening to Brené Brown and Glennon Doyle on a podcast today. That made me feel great.
Love it. Doing girl things.
It's not just girl things.
Boys can do it too.
They're powerful women. They're talking about stuff that matters for no matter what your gender is.
That's true. And also, gender's like really a bullshit concept.
It is. So doing human things. That's a new song.
That's nice.
Yeah.
That's good.
Anyway, so, you know, I'm feeling fine. I'm pretty good. I don't know where I am on the scale. Maybe I'm a 7. You know.
Hey, nice. So you snuck over the line into the low end of good.
There's stuff that's you know on my mind that's worrying me for sure. And you know, if I noticed earlier, I had this little break after dinner when you were doing dishes. We're doing a night pod tonight. So this is a post dinner podcast recording.
Mm-hmm.
But when you were doing dishes and I was sitting in the living room just with a minute to myself, I got on Twitter and like I noticed within like 3 minutes of being on Twitter that like, okay, this is not doing anything for my mood.
Yeah. I mean, it is.
I'm not learning.
But
yeah.
Not good things.
Yeah. I wasn't really learning anything new. And it was just, you know, reading other people being freaked out and I wasn't helping. So, you know, I chose to stop doing that, which is good. But I'm okay. Doing okay.
That's good.
And, you know, this last week, it has been a better week than the week before for me, you know?
Yeah, same.
So I'm grateful for that.
You're
you know,
on an upswing personally.
I'm on an upswing right now. And I acknowledge that some of that is just purely by chance. And, you know, like, you know, that I'm sure that there are hormones involved in this and just emotional cycles, psychological waves.
I have them too, guys have them too.
Of course. Oh, I know it.
Yeah.
I absolutely know.
I don't have like a period, but I have a cyclical emotional thing.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I wasn't even referring to like a period hormones, just, you know, being a human in a human body, there are, you know, ups, there are downs.
Yeah.
And I happen to be on a bit of an upswing right now, which I'm grateful for because the holy moly, the last week has been just another like left and right just blows from like, you know, the news.
Yeah.
it's been really rough. Just there's not really much good news.
Yeah.
You know, and so I'm grateful to have to be feeling a little bit more resilient than I have been.
The Seahawks are apparently doing okay, so.
Oh, well, that's good.
That's good news.
If I paid attention to football, then that maybe that would matter to me.
Also, football is bullshit.
But the last, you know, any NFL fans want to rebut Jamie on that?
It's a modern gladiator sport where mostly people of color destroy each other's futures for the entertainment of and enrichment of white people.
Yeah, I feel you. I do. Yeah. We do have some NFL lovers who do listen to this.
Yeah. Well, get your shit together, people. It's an amazingly compelling sport. Like, I get it. You know what I mean? But it's just like, here's the thing, right? Like, there's a point in your life where you wake up to things and you can't unsee them. You know what I mean?
Right, right, right.
And like, I can no longer pretend that the NFL isn't seriously screwed up.
I just can't do it.
You know what I mean?
I get it.
I can't do that. I used to be able to. Mm-hmm. And it's an amazing sport. I love watching people play it.
Yeah.
The camera work is amazing. It's all great.
Yeah.
And also the other things I said about the underlying deeply problematic parts of it are true. And,
absolutely.
And you can't get past them.
Totally.
I can't get past them. Maybe you can, listener.
Oh, no.
But hopefully a little bit less now.
Oh, no.
In which Jamie
ruins
the NFL.
Why are we talking about football anyway? That's not even on our list.
I just wanted to detour and quickly ruin the NFL for people.
Oh, great.
Sorry.
Okay, cool.
Sorry.
Cool.
Sorry.
So, you know, this last week we've spent a lot of time volunteering. This is like, I think, our third or so week that we've done. At least a couple of hours. At least a couple of shifts, right.
Which are 2 to 3 hours each.
Volunteering, doing phone banking for the election.
Yep.
It's been great. Those are the times I feel the best. We did a new kind of phone bank this afternoon where we were doing vote chasing.
It's called vote chasing, people.
Basically, we were calling... It was really kind of cool, actually.
Yeah, it was.
We were calling people in Wisconsin because this is the... We have dedicated a sort of our... Committed our volunteer time to the state of Wisconsin.
As goes Wisconsin, so goes the nation.
And so the phone bank we were doing today was we were calling people who had received voter registration forms in the mail, but who had not yet registered to vote.
Not yet returned them or dealt with them.
So according to the data available, the publicly available data, they had not yet registered to vote. So we were calling them to offer them assistance to get that done.
Yeah, seriously.
and so I talked with a couple of different people that I was actually able to help get registered to vote.
It's amazing.
And
feels really good.
It does feel really good. I mean, there was one young woman I talked with who had, you know, she told me, she's like, my friends have been bugging me about this. They're all registered. But like, I just told them that I was, you know, running into a couple of obstacles and I just wasn't getting it done. I was procrastinating. So I'm so glad you called today.
That's great.
Like, she was thanking me for helping her do this, which is great. And so because of our phone calls today, there's a few more people who are going to be able to vote in Wisconsin this election.
And so just the phone bank that you and I were on today had over 150 people on it.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And imagine that each of them, like you and I, got, say, an average of 4 or 5 people.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You know? Then that is... that's 600 more people registered to vote.
Right.
Between like 600 and 750 people, if you've got 4 or 5 each.
In a 2-hour span of time.
In a 2-hour span. And now if you multiply that out over like every shift that's happening this week, you know, I think there's 10 shifts this week, that's 6,000 people. If you multiply that by 2 weeks, that's 12,000 people. You know how many votes Clinton lost Wisconsin by in 2016? About 12,000 people.
Yeah, there you go.
So, you know...
So this stuff matters.
Yeah.
And it feels really good to be part of making that happen.
Yeah.
It's the thing that makes me feel the best.
Yep.
And honestly, I feel like I'm going to be ramping up. I made this promise. We were doing a phone bank last Friday when a friend texted to tell us about Ruth Bader Ginsburg passing away.
Yeah.
It was literally in the middle of a phone bank.
And it was like 3 friends at once from different states.
It's true. You know, and honestly, there's nothing I would have rather have been doing at that moment than currently being involved in a phone bank, which actually the organizers cut short because everybody was having a moment when that news broke.
Which is funny because like I was like, no, I need to keep doing this, please. I need my phone back.
Totally.
Medicine. Why are you turning off my medicine?
I understand why they did it.
Yeah.
You know, but I think also for me, you know, to be, you know, I had my earbuds in my ear ready to make my next phone call when I got that news.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a blow. It felt scary. It felt hard. It felt worrisome. All the feelings. And I felt like, okay, I can wallow in that. And I certainly need to grieve. Like there's that part of it and that needs to happen. That is a necessary part of the process. But I was really grateful for the opportunity because I had my earbuds in ready to make my next phone call that I had an immediate opportunity to channel that anguish into action to work for the outcome that we desperately need in November, especially now since RBG has passed away.
And it was amazing, people. Shannon just like, she had her earbuds in and she had that number and she just hit dial and she just went,
no, I didn't.
Okay, that's not true.
I didn't.
But I made that part up.
Honestly, though, the next person that I called had just also gotten the news.
Yeah, oh, wow.
And so we had a moment together. Mm. It was just me and this woman in Wisconsin just having a moment sharing, you know, what this meant to us.
Oh, that's so valuable.
You know, we connected. And she signed up to be a poll worker.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so like,
after connecting in that deep of a way around that deep of an issue, how could you not?
Totally.
If you had asked her to cut off her pinky finger, she would have been like, well, you know what? We've had a good conversation. I'll do it.
No, so, you know, it felt
really...
This is
for RPG.
It felt really good to be able to channel that energy into something positive. And so that's why, you know, if you want more information about this phone banking thing that we're talking about, first of all, we dedicated half of the episode last week to this topic. All you want to know about it and more, we talked about it.
Yep.
And also, we have started a Let's Save Democracy Club on Facebook for people who are either already volunteering or who are interested in volunteering but don't know where to start,
don't know
what the resources are to do it. We would love to have you join us. Just message one of us, either on Facebook or our emails.
I'll tell you the address right now. Heck,
okay,
it's facebook.com/groups/letssavedemocracy. Again, that's facebook.com/groups/letssavedemocracy.
Come on in. Join us.
Just get yourself in there. Hit join. We'll approve you. There's some questions you have to answer. It's just a weed out looky-loos. There's one question being like, you know, it's like, what do you want to do? I am volunteering. I want to learn how to volunteer. Or I don't want to do either of the above. I just want to look on. And if you select the third one, we don't let you in.
You don't get to come into the club.
Yeah, because this is not for looky-loos. Like, this is a place for people who, well, like they said in The Princess Bride, we are men of action.
That's right.
We're also women of action. But we're people of action in the Let's Save Democracy group. And it's just a place for us to encourage each other and share resources and info. Mm-hmm. And it's great because the group's a little bit mature now. So we have someone who's sort of become the text banking expert. He made an amazing post where every single thing you would want to know about text banking, how it feels, what his experience is, and how to get going, where to click to sign up. It's all in one post. I have pinned it. It's in the announcements. You just go look at it. You can do it. We just had someone do that for postcard writing the other day. That's great. I just tapped somebody to do this letter writing thing. She's going to share her experience and I'll pin that as well. So it's a resource heavy group where people are just sharing their experience, answering questions, helping each other out, to the point being that we can help each other to do this. And it's great. The size of this group, by the way, the size of our Let's Save Democracy group has doubled since Ruth Bader Ginsburg died.
Yeah.
People are pissed.
People are ready.
And they're looking. I heard from so many people on Friday, like, I'm just pissed. I need to do something. Please tell me how to help.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. And it's great because we have this group where people can just go learn stuff now.
Yeah.
It's really good. It's like a turnkey thing, people. Mm-hmm. So if that's you, if you're pissed and you need somewhere to take that energy,
Or you're worried.
Yeah.
Or you're sad.
Yeah.
I mean, like, whatever the feeling is that you're having.
Yes.
You can channel that into action.
Point being, sitting around feeling all the feelings for the next 41 days, super great, won't help change things.
Yeah.
So what you need to do is A, feel the feelings, and B, also do shit.
Yeah, exactly.
This is how you do shit.
That's right.
You go to the group, or you can do it on your own. But if you need help, we can help.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So that's been a really great sort of corner of our lives. That's more than a corner. It's like a whole room in our house right now.
Seriously, it's taking 2 to 4 hours a day every day for, I think, each of us.
I'm happy to do it.
Me too.
I'm happy to do it.
Yep.
So we do run out of steam, though, at the end of the day. The last week or so, we've run out of steam at the end of the day, whether we're doing election work or doing some music work. And
it's mostly, honestly, it's been election
work. You've done a lot of music work, too.
Oh, that's fair.
You have, yes. I joined you in some of it, too. But anyways,
but
we've run out of steam, and so we've watched a ton of movies. We're just like movie heads this last week.
But like not film.
Not film.
Movies.
We have decided that we're going to watch the entire Fast and Furious franchise.
Yeah.
From beginning to end. We're on film 2.
We have finished.
We're on movie 2.
We have finished movie 2.
Yeah.
We're on movie 3. Really.
And you know what? They have been so just fun. Like it's just brainless, good fun.
Yeah.
They're not great movies, but they're also not bad movies.
No.
They
got a lot of heart.
They have some heart.
Yep.
Yep.
And you know what else?
Friendship.
Yep.
You know,
there's camaraderie,
loyalty.
Yeah. And also, like, it's really different. It's culturally based, and it's based on a different culture than I've ever really been a part of. Like, I don't know a single thing about street racing.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful. It's very kind of cartoony.
I know what Nas is now. Never heard that word before.
Mm-mm. Yeah. Shannon's referring to nitrous oxide people. You know, you can give your car a boost with it when you're street racing.
I had no idea.
Other kinds of racing or car activities.
I love it how when they push the Nas button in the middle of a street race, the way that they film it makes it look like they've gone into like warp speed into space.
Oh, yeah.
It's so great.
Like the person's eyeballs can't keep up with how fast the world's going.
Also, I love how like, okay, so theoretically, these are all like experienced street drivers who are racing, street racers. And inevitably, every time one of them pushes the little Nas button in their car, they act surprised at how fast the car is going. Yeah. And I'm like, you knew that was going to happen.
Yeah. Like, yeah. You've for sure not done this but never before.
They always have this look of like, oh my gosh, I'm suddenly going really fast.
Yeah. Like, it's amazing. It's really good. A lot of suspension of disbelief for these movies, which I am totally into because I need to suspend a lot of things right now. Disbelief just being one of them.
Yes.
You know, and most other forms of my reality, really.
Oh,
you
know,
disbelief just being the tip of the iceberg.
Suspend it all.
Yeah.
For
seriously.
A little while. It's very important.
Shannon raised a great point last night, too, which is that, like, so all these movies, right, the central conceit is that for some reason, there's a need for one or many really badass, very fast drivers, street drivers.
Yeah.
And like Shannon's like, they have to think of different situations, 8 movies worth of situations where someone would ostensibly need a really fast driver.
Yeah.
It's so true. What a good point.
I mean, how often in your life do you think to yourself, what I could really use in this situation is a really fast street driver?
Yeah. Well, last night, for
example.
Street
racer. Yeah.
Last night, for example, there was this bad guy and he needed to get millions of dollars worth of cash to his private jet.
Uh-huh.
But they were across town from each other. He couldn't be caught with the money because that would prove that he was doing the crimes.
Right.
So he was going to drive himself to his private jet. And they needed a street racer because they could only get the cops, the crooked cops, to commit to suspending their policing activities for 15 minutes. So, so the street racer had 15 minutes to get the cash to the jet.
That's right. And actually,
that was the reason.
They needed two street racers, because otherwise you wouldn't have had a buddy movie like we had.
It's true. Well, and also there were practical reasons like blocking for each other
and creating
diversions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Splitting the cash into two vehicles in case one doesn't make it maybe and the other does.
Yep. I don't know. That's a thing they did.
Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's more from the bad guy's point of view, but I like the way you think.
Thank you. I'm just here to say that the Fast and Furious franchise is so far A+.
Yeah.
Like, I'm really enjoying it.
Really good.
It's doing exactly the job I need for it to do.
Yeah.
And it's been really fun.
Yeah.
What else have we done? We got to
Some people take heroin. We watch Fast and Furious movies. I'm checking out.
That's right. Another thing we got to do this last weekend is we got to spend some time outdoors because the air finally cleared up here.
Yes.
On Saturday, we were like, it was the first day that we had free time and that we could get outside in the newly clean air. And we got in the car, we drove down by the waterfront and we got out and the waterfront park was open again. It hasn't been open for all of COVID-19.
It's true, since March.
So we got to park there and walk around. It wasn't too busy, so we didn't feel like we were like around too many other people. Whenever we passed folks by, we were able to put masks on and, you know, be, you know, conscientious and all that kind of stuff. It was really, really good. It felt safe and good. And I just standing there by the water with the clean air and the you know, nice temperatures, taking deep breaths in. It doesn't seem like it should be something that's all that much to write home about, but like,
it helps.
I like in that moment, I felt so grateful to be able to just take a big gulp of clean air.
Yeah.
Like this shouldn't be something that we would need to feel like we shouldn't take for granted. But it, like over the last couple of weeks of being inundated with smoke filled air, man, I have taken for granted the ability to just breathe.
Yeah.
And
true.
It felt really great to be able to do that.
It also made me really think back to the decade that we lived in Los Angeles, specifically the 8 years that we lived in the San Gabriel Valley.
Mm-hmm.
All those days we couldn't see the mountains. Like,
yeah.
I kind of wonder how good the air that we were breathing was on those days.
We weren't paying attention to the AQI back in those days.
I don't even think they had one. That was in the before times.
I'm sure they did.
It's a brand new scale they invented to measure just how bad our life is right now.
I don't think that's true. But it was really great to get outside. And, you know, I had to go pick up a prescription that day too. And I mentioned to the woman at the pharmacy, she asked how I was doing. And I said that we got to go outside for a walk today. And it was just so great to get to breathe in the clean air. And she says, yes. And she goes, and one day we'll also get to do that with friends and family and give each other hugs. Yeah. And I just thought, yeah, like, yeah. I just can't wait for the, like, that's going to be a time, another one of those times. It's like we have taken for granted the ability to just gather.
Yeah,
with our people. And, you know, this time is certainly making us not take that for granted anymore.
Yep.
And it's going to be great when we get to do that again.
Another thing we got to do this week that was wonderful is we had our second monthly Misfit Stars sponsored Facebook Live acoustic concert.
Oh, it was so fun.
It was really fun. So people, if you don't know what these are, we play Shannon's songs, but I play piano and Shannon sings.
Mm-hmm.
I play keyboard, really. I often use a piano sound because there's some oomph, but sometimes I'll use a different sound.
Occasionally.
I did twice this concert. And it's cool. It's fun. I don't have a lot of time to rehearse, so the arrangements tend to be minimal, off the cuff, and enthusiastic. And I tend to make up in volume what I have not had time to rehearse the technique for.
Oh, you know? Come on. They're great.
And they're great.
The rawness of it, I think, is what makes them special.
Oh, I think it's good. I'm not disparaging myself.
Yeah.
I'm just saying,
okay,
when you have a limited amount of time, you have to make certain choices.
Sure.
You know, if there's some things that, like, that just take time, like rehearsing stuff to play it accurately and well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Know? And then there's other options.
But so you
which
did,
is to play the shit out of it.
You did play well. You did play, and you played the shit out of it too.
Thank you.
And it was a really fun show. I love these. It's fun to do these arrangements of the songs. Like, it's just you on a keyboard and me singing, and so they, and it's not me playing. Like, if it were me playing, I would probably play the parts I wrote exactly for the songs, or at least close enough to them, you know. But you approach piano playing differently than I do.
Yeah.
And so there's that, you know, difference of an influence in these arrangements. And I get to just sing and not think about also playing. So my singing can take on a different quality than it does when I'm pairing it with playing.
Yeah.
And just then the two of us together, you know, like, it brings a new twist to these songs, which I'm really enjoying. Like, it's just been really fun to sort of get to know these songs in a new way.
Yeah.
And also fun because the set lists are picked by our Misfit Stars community. So they voted this last week.
Which you could do, by the way, misfitstars.com/join.
And they picked the songs. And man, just some really great songs rose to the top of the list this week. Just really appropriate for this moment.
It was true.
Exactly what I needed yesterday when we did the show. We're recording this podcast on Monday, so Sunday night was the show.
Mm-hmm.
It was really neat.
If you want to watch the show, if you didn't get a chance, I would like to say that I'll put the link in. I'll make a note of it right now. Link in
show notes.
Yeah. I might do it.
It might be there. I'll try to help remind you.
Just go to Shannon's Facebook page, not her business page, but just her personal one, and it'll be there. Just scroll down a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's from Sunday evening at 7 p.m. Western.
It was really fun. So
9 Central.
Well, that's kind of a good wrap up of what we've been doing this last week. Should we take a short break and then get back and dive into imagining our future?
Heck yes, because man, do we need to do that big time.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, back in a sec.
See you soon.
You guys.
Yeah. So, you know, we want to talk about imagining our future. And
by the way, I said guys. That's inappropriate. I missed you all.
Thank you.
Because it's not just guys listening.
Appreciate that.
Yeah.
So I had a couple of experiences earlier today that sort of like framed this section of the
podcast. You're going to set this up for us?
I'll set it up for
us. Okay, cool.
First of all, I mentioned earlier that I listened to the Brené Brown podcast where she was interviewing Glennon Doyle back from like March. I've been wanting to listen to it for months, but I finally did.
That's like the queen featuring David Bowie of podcasts.
Oh, heck yeah. For sure.
You know what I mean?
It's so good.
It's an unbeatable 1-2 punch.
It really is. And I just recently finished Glennon Doyle's book, Untamed, which phenomenal book. So, so good. I cannot recommend it highly enough. She had women in mind when she wrote it, but it is not a book just for women. Absolutely not.
You think?
It is. Oh, for sure. It's really, really good stuff. And so I listened to their podcast conversation while I was making dinner earlier tonight. And one of the things that they talked about, and Glennon talks about this in her book as well, is the idea of imagination. And she was suggesting that imagination is not just a tool. It's not a tool to escape reality, but a tool to create the world that we want to live in. When we use our imagination in its most powerful way, it is not an escapist activity. It is a way to move forward to making a world that looks more like the one we want to inhabit.
Well, I mean, you literally wrote an entire album about this concept in 2016.
So this is
not a new concept around this household.
Hits home for me. Yeah, for sure. We called that album Creationism. We borrowed that word from its...
We took that goddamn word back.
That's right. Because we create the world that we live in. And if we can imagine it to be more beautiful and more just and more compassionate than it currently is, we can make that. We can build that world. But it starts with being able to imagine it. And then I had my moment alone when you were doing dishes, there was this other moment. The one good thing I saw on Twitter before I logged myself off was someone had posted this little snippet of a video of an interview between the journalist April Ryan and Kamala Harris.
And April Ryan, for context, is black, right?
She's a black woman, yeah. And she's a White House correspondent. So she is one of the reporters that shows up at the White House press briefings and asks questions, you know.
Poor woman being gaslit for your job.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
That's terrible.
So she was interviewing Kamala Harris, or they were having a conversation. And the snippet of the clip that I saw was just this wonderful little moment where April Ryan, who normally when I see her, it's videos of her being very serious, asking questions at the White House press briefing.
Sure, you're in the White House. You can't screw around.
But in this conversation, she just was more relaxed and being herself, you know? Like, and so she had this look on her face as she was about to set this question for Kamala Harris. And she said, you know, she described her job and how normally she goes to the press briefings and she raises her hand and it's Mr. President this or Mr. Vice President that or whatever. And she began to describe a future in which she will show up at the White House press briefing room and that she will raise her hand and she will utter the words, Madam Vice President, and she will be talking to Kamala Harris. And as she was describing this scenario, just the look on her face was one of, it was wistful and cheerful. And like she was just relishing the imagination, in her imagination, this scene from the future where she will be called on by Madam Vice President at that podium. And then she goes on to say, and you look like me. You know, they are both women of color. She said, it sends chills through my body to imagine that moment when it will come. And it was just a really neat thing to watch. April Ryan imagining a future that she could really feel great about, you know,
that
small moment, you know, and it just got me thinking about the idea that, you know, the stuff that we allow ourselves to imagine right now, it's maybe more powerful than ever for us to engage our imaginations in those ways.
Yeah.
Especially as the news seems to get darker and darker. The battle seems to be getting tougher and tougher.
Yep.
You know, now more than ever is it important for us to engage our imagination in this time. You know, like, what are some of the things that, like, you imagine or you had a thought you were about to say something?
No, I didn't. I was just going to sort of bring it, like, my thought specifically was just immediately to tie it back to, you know, the biggest news of this week, which is the passing of Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, she was this little, tiny, frail 87-year-old woman, one-woman dam. You know what I mean?
Frail in body.
Yes, that's right.
Not in spirit.
In body, right? But seriously, she was this one-woman dam. She was the only thing standing mm-hmm. between the American public and millions of people losing their health care, civil rights, reproductive rights. Mm-hmm. She was a one-woman bulwark against all of that.
Right.
Which, first of all, that's not the sign of a healthy democracy. Like one little old lady should not be the only thing protecting us from
losing our healthcare,
a cavalcade of evils.
Losing our reproductive rights, losing our civil rights, losing LGBTQ people losing rights.
Right. That's civil rights still, but yes.
It is. I was just kind of wanting to like really drill down on the specifics. But yeah, no, one person should not be the keeper of all of that.
Right.
Especially when all of those things that I just listed and the things that you listed are things that the majority of Americans want.
Yeah.
We...
Uncontroversially. Big majorities.
Big majorities.
Like 70% type majorities.
Yes.
Not like a 51-49 kind of thing. No. Overwhelmingly.
Right.
People don't want their system of government to screw them. Turns out.
Turns out.
It turns out I actually want to be treated well by the place they live.
Right.
Which when I say it like that, I think probably sounds pretty uncontroversial. It's weird how people have managed to make it controversial. It's not.
Yeah.
You know, and it's because a tiny majority of people have been making the rules for all of us for way too long. And somehow a lot of us have just kind of gotten used to that. And by the way, most of these people are people who look like me only with a lot of money.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's not women of color. It's not poor people. Like, most people don't have a seat at the table and never have. It's just white guys, mostly. Mm-hmm. And mostly, mm-hmm. it's people with a ton of money.
Yeah.
There are huge, you know, exceptions to the rule. AOC, for example, mm-hmm. she is not of means whatsoever, and she is a Latinx woman.
Mm-hmm.
And that's badass.
Mm-hmm.
But she is...
But she doesn't hold...
The exception.
Lots of power, either. I mean, she's got some power, because she's a representative in the House.
She's got a bully pulpit, too.
Yeah, yeah. You know? But she doesn't have the kind of power that Mitch McConnell has.
Nope, not at all.
Not anywhere close.
And, you know, I think the point here, right, is that, like, there is a temptation for a whole ton of people in this time to do woe is me, you know? To let this be the thing that breaks them. Like, as if 2020... I heard so much of this over the weekend. Like, this is the final thing. We are doomed. I literally heard I saw 15 plus people say we are doomed in comments on Facebook posts.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
That to me is a failure of imagination. And I think it speaks to what we're talking about here, right? Because the whole point is that if we're imagining our future, if the thoughts that we put in our brains are how we create the future,
mm-hmm.
the thought we should be having is not we are doomed. Because that's a future we're working to create, if that's the energy we're putting into the world.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Can I just say, before we continue with the conversation about imagining what's possible, that, you know, I think that, you know, especially when it comes to social media, when something big like this happens and we have big feelings about it,
mm-hmm.
I think that a lot of us, myself included, grapple with, well, I should say something about this, you know? Like, I shouldn't let this moment go by without saying something. And first of all, it's weird that we're now in a place where we feel like we have a responsibility to say something publicly about stuff like this.
Yeah.
And yet we are, so here we are, you know? But I think that in the middle of a person's grief, in the middle of somebody's shock,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the middle of all the immediate feelings... Yeah, you know, I get it. I get the sentiment of feeling we're doomed.
Yeah,
and
that's
fair. And also,
mm-hmm.
at the same time, I feel like we can't stay there. We can't stay there for very long.
No, because again, Princess Bride, we are people of action.
We are people of action.
It's very important to remember that, you know,
mm-hmm.
because the people who are doing all the horrible shit that make us feel like we are doomed,
mm-hmm.
us feeling like we are doomed is the point of all the horrible shit.
Mm-hmm.
It's to make us feel like we have no agency.
Right.
It's to make us limit our imaginations. It's to make us think that less is possible.
Right.
Maybe nothing is possible.
Right.
Right? It's to make us roll over and not try to change anything.
Right.
That's the whole point of
exactly.
it.
Exactly. So last year in 2019, we put out a record called Revolutionary Acts of Optimism. Because
relevant.
I was really taken by this idea at that time, and I feel like I need to revisit some of the ideas and thoughts that you know, brought that album into being. Mm. You know, I'm thinking about the song Tables, mm-hmm. that was the last song on that record.
The tables turn first in our minds.
That's right.
That's a Shannon Curtis lyric, ladies and gentlemen. That's a chorus of that song. How good is that? She would never say it. I can say it.
Thank
it's
you.
Really good.
But, you know, I think that that is true.
Did I just sound like the president there with that whole, she would never say it, I can say it?
No, I didn't get that vibe.
Thank God.
Thank God.
If I had strung it together with but and they did and they weren't related, then it would have.
Yes. But, you know, that song was really born out of the idea that, you know, when the odds seem to be stacked against us, that imagining that we can turn the tables is the first step in actually turning the tables, you know? And that the notion...
It's a lot like the idea in Bending the Atmosphere that you wrote about this year, right? Like the thing that makes a difference is like putting that first little thing out into the universe. Like you've got to do that. You gotta have the... Well, it's even before that. You have to have the idea and then put it out.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like the notion that, you know... Without imagining something different, without imagining those tables being turned, mm-hmm. the alternative is to give in. Mm-hmm. And cynicism is exactly the thing that people who are in the status quo in power now count on us to give in to. They count on us giving in to cynicism in order to maintain their power.
Yeah.
And
I had this conversation today on the phone with this woman.
Did you?
Right? When we were doing our voter chasing thing.
Oh, tell me about it.
So, first of all, it was really, really rewarding. She picks up the phone and I say who I am and, you know, why I'm calling, you know, to make sure she's registered to vote. And mm-hmm. she says, kind of despondently, like, I'm not going to vote this year. And I said, I was kind of taken aback. I'm not used to that line of thinking. You know, I was like, and I was just kind of stalling for a second. You know what I mean?
And it's so interesting that she actually admitted that to you too.
Yes, I know. She was very forthcoming about it and like not confrontational. And she wasn't like, I'm not voting goodbye. She just kind of said it. She sort of sounded downbeat. And I was that's really interesting. Do you mind telling me why you're making that choice?
Yeah.
And she said, it's because I don't like either of the candidates. Uh-huh. Right? And so I said to her, well, you know, honestly, I don't either. You know what I mean? Like, they're both pretty, like, one of them is objectively evil and the other one is pretty uninspiring, you know? And that's okay. But then I was like, do you mind me sharing with you a little bit why I'm voting and why I feel it's important?
Uh-huh.
You know? And she said, yeah. And so I just did, you know, I mm-hmm. shared with her about, you know, just how I feel that, like, democracy itself is on the ballot, you know, in this time. And that, you know, and that there are much bigger issues at play. It's not just about the one person or the other, you know.
Right.
And, you know, and also, like, she was a Latina woman. Like, it was very, you know, clear from her name, you know. Mm-hmm. And I just said straight up that something would be super inspiring to me would be to have a woman of color in the White House.
Right.
You know, in a position of power. Michelle Obama was there, but, like, you know, the First Lady is...
an elected official.
An elected official. You know, and the idea that we can change the tone and that we can try to make our country work better for us, mm-hmm. you know, the end of the conversation was that she's like, all right, you've convinced me, I'm going to vote.
That's so cool.
And we got her registered.
That's great.
Yeah. What the hell were we even talking about? I got off on a rabbit trail.
It was... Okay, you were reveling in the story.
I was really stoked. It was like the one good thing that happened today, other than recording this podcast and being married to you.
Still married. Check.
Doing good. Right.
So no, we were talking about to change things, we have to start with the idea of imagining things can change.
And that's exactly it. You know, I think that she had fallen prey to that exact idea, like the idea that it just doesn't matter, that it's two uninspiring people, so who even cares? Nothing matters.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think what I was able to do was to, you know, imbue in her just a mm-hmm. small seed, a small idea, you know, implant in her a small seed of an idea, maybe, that there are ways in which you can make a difference in this world.
And we were also talking about the idea that that the current power structure requires mm-hmm. our cynicism in order to maintain the status quo.
Yeah.
And so...
And I told her. I was like, I told her about Wisconsin. I'm like, you live in the most important state.
Yeah.
If there's any place where your vote counts more than any other place, like maybe in the world, it's where you live.
Right.
Like, you're so lucky.
Yeah.
You live in a place where your vote actually makes a difference. I explained to her, like, my vote has never made a difference in a presidential election my entire adult life because I lived in Massachusetts, then California, then Washington. They always go blue. Yeah. They never don't go blue.
Right.
It doesn't matter what I do. Right. I could vote angrily and Republicanly and it would still just go blue. Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, she can actually make a difference.
Right.
That's
right.
A big deal. That in of itself is a reason not to feel cynical.
Right.
Because there's a possibility for a change right there.
You know, and this is something that I hear from leaders that are inspiring to me. I watched a snippet of AOC giving, it was an Instagram live that she did.
I saw that on the night of
RBG's passing, which was just so heartfelt and great. But, you know, and others too, you know.
By the way, total side note.
What?
But how many people out there try to say RBG but say RGB?
All the time.
Like the color scheme?
I do it all the time. Anyway.
Sound off in the comments. Anyway, you were saying.
But I see, you know, leaders that I respect and admire, you know, talking about this idea that the path forward to like restoring our country.
Yeah.
The path forward vis-a-vis the pandemic.
Yep.
Vis-a-vis the basics of our democracy.
Yeah.
Vis-a-vis civil rights. Vis-a-vis our healthcare in general, beyond just the
Are you going
the
for
pandemic.
Like a world record of vis-a-vis?
Maybe.
You're at four.
But you know, the path forward to restoring all these things is really steep. It is. Like, there's a lot of work to be done.
Yeah.
But
there's so much work to be done.
There's so much work to be done. There's a lot that we have to rebuild. Like, man, the bull has gone through the China shop and things are in shambles.
Yeah.
You know?
We've gotten to a point where we have gotten somehow used to perennial minority rule in this country, which is really, really strange for ostensibly the greatest democracy in the history of time.
Right. So there's the path forward is massively steep. And also, the moment that we decide that it's undoable, that we can't get there,
it's over.
Is the moment it's over.
That's it.
And so we have power to decide this isn't over. This shit is not over.
That's right.
And so,
and also, this is something you and I were talking about before recording. Like, as hard as it seems to make changes right now, it will never be easier than it is right now.
That is absolutely true.
10 minutes from now, like by the time this podcast comes out, it will be slightly harder.
Look,
like we got to start right now.
You know, you mentioned a moment ago this idea that we've gotten used to this notion of minority rule. And let's just break that down briefly. I don't want to get too much into the weeds. This is not a political podcast, but you can't not be political in the year 2020. So here we are.
It's a personal podcast by two persons who happen to be very, very interested in politics.
We are, but also I think that aside from all that, you just can't ignore this and expect to survive in the year 2020.
It's true.
These are the most important things to talk about right now.
You ignore politics at your own peril in 2020.
So here, let's just break down this idea of minority rule very briefly. The last six of seven presidents that were, the last six of seven presidential elections, when Republicans have won, they have not won with the popular vote.
Yeah.
Is that
you said it in a confusing, garbled way.
Okay.
So basically, if you discount George W. Bush's re-election,
okay,
Republicans have not won the presidency with a popular vote majority since George H.W. Bush in 1988.
Okay.
I was 14 years old.
Got it. Okay, so that's one example of minority rule.
I was 15.
Okay.
Either way,
another example of minority rule is that we can stay with the presidency for a moment.
Yep.
and it has to do with the Electoral College, related to the popular vote. That, like, a vote of somebody in Wisconsin for the president is worth 78 times the power of a vote of somebody in the state of California.
Right.
Because of the way the Electoral College is set up. The Electoral College, and look it up, is a vestige of slavery.
Yep.
It is a racist, anti-democratic institution, and we need to get rid of it. We're going to talk about that in a minute.
It was set up as a concession to southern states.
Yes. But anyway, we're not going to get into the whole history of that, but if you're curious, it's good reading. So there's that. Let's move to the Senate. The Senate is represented by, there are 100 senators. Each state gets two senators. The population of the country is largely concentrated in states that are for the most part, vote Democratic.
Yep.
And so the vast majority of the senators in the Senate are represented by tiny states. Representing tiny states.
Yeah.
Two senators from the state of
Wyoming,
North Dakota, Wyoming, which has like, what, 500,000 people?
Yep.
those two senators have equal power to two senators from the state of California. Again, those California, Wyoming
which has
comparison.
Like 40 million people.
Right.
So it's 80 times more people
right.
than in Wyoming.
Right.
But the senators have the same amount of power from the two states.
Right.
That's minority rule.
It is minority rule. Let's move on to the House of Representatives. The House of Representatives ostensibly ought to be the more sort of like egalitarian, like representative democracy part of things.
Because the seats are allocated on a population basis.
Proportionally.
Okay, that's good.
That's a good thing.
So California has way more than Wyoming. That's a good start. Mm-hmm. That's good. However,
gerrymandering. There are districts that have been drawn to favor political parties, and both parties have historically done this, except for the fact that the last time the maps were drawn for a lot of these districts was when Republicans had control, and so they are just drastically shifted.
Well, and also there have been computer advances in the last 20 years.
Right.
Like, they can do stuff with data to draw the maps now, like they were able to in 2010, that they were not able to do in 2000.
Right.
And that's just a weird timing of power and technology.
Yep.
But they had the ability to use the technology to gerrymander the shit out of places, and they did so in 2010.
Right.
Meaning that there are places like Wisconsin, again, to use them as an example, like they vote consistently, what, like 60-65% Democratic?
The people
do, you know?
And yet,
their legislature is 70% Republican.
Right. So this is true.
Because of gerrymandering.
Right. And the gerrymandering affects the House of Representatives at the national level, and also, like you were saying, just now the state legislatures.
I've got another reason that the House of Representatives is undemocratic.
Tell me why.
Because theoretically, it should be totally democratic because they allocate it proportionally, but they have capped the number of seats at 435. And so if you get way more people in a place like California,
right.
you don't get any more representatives.
Oh my gosh.
They actually get allocated because the overall population is going up, but there is a cap on the number. Actually, other places besides California get proportionally more representation as the population of the country increases.
But, you know, they'd have to build a bigger building if they added more representatives. It would be a whole thing.
Yeah.
Just
That's really
kidding.
True.
No,
architecture
is
hard.
But so these are, you know, trying to be as brief as possible, listing, you know, these ways in which, you know, minority rule exists. We can't forget the Supreme Court. Obviously, this is one of the biggest issues of the week because of the way in which, four of the current conservative justices on the Supreme Court that were nominated by Republican presidents, those presidents were elected not by a majority of voters, right?
Yeah.
They didn't win the popular vote. It might be. I think it's four. Anyway,
okay.
But they exist. Those that exist on the court, you know, are there because of presidents who were not elected by a majority of
right.
the population.
So these presidents were elected by a minority of the people due to quirks in the Electoral College.
Right.
The majority of people in the country didn't want them to be there, but they got there anyway, and then they put all these conservative justices
right.
on the court.
And then when, you know, two vacancies ago in the last year of Barack Obama's term, Antonin Scalia passed away, and there was a vacancy on the court, and he nominated a guy named Merrick Garland to be on the court.
Ironically, a pretty moderate centrist type of dude, some like far left radical.
Mitch McConnell would not even meet with him, let alone get anywhere close to allowing a vote on his appointment to the Supreme Court for made up stupid reasons. He was just a bare power grab.
That's all it was.
Not going to allow a Democratic president to to nominate somebody for the Supreme Court. And so here he is, Mitch McConnell, Senate leader of a body that is, again, led by minority rule because of the reasons we've already talked about the Senate, stopping a Democratic president from nominating somebody to the court. Just a naked power grab.
Yeah. And subverting the will of the voters. The voters put Barack Obama with a majority vote into the office of the presidency from 2013 through 2016 in the 2012 election, meaning that they wanted him to make decisions for that four-year period. That's how elections work. That's why you do that.
Right. And of course, you know, here we are 43 days away from this election.
Mm-hmm.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg has passed away, and Mitch McConnell's own rule, of course, does not apply because it was a bullshit rule to begin with. Yeah. It was just so he could grab that power and hold that seat for a potential Republican nomination, which worked out for him.
Yeah.
So again,
and by the way, by so doing, to have there be higher stakes for the presidency and throw more votes toward President Trump, right, which theoretically helped put him in office.
But my point here, yes, you're right about that. My point here is also in that branch of government, we also are dealing with minority rule in the Supreme Court,
sure,
in the court system as well.
Yep.
So minority rule sucks, man.
Yeah. It's fundamentally unfair. And people, Shannon has the biggest justice streak going through her. And when something is unfair, she gets more pissed off,
right,
than any person on the planet.
Right. So the point of outlining all of these things right now is not just to be like, to get all mad, because I mean, I can get mad and I get mad.
And you are mad.
And I am mad.
Yeah.
The point is to illustrate that the climb is very uphill.
Yep.
Right? The climb to a more just organization of our society is very uphill.
Yeah.
The climb to actually preserving something that looks like an actual democracy is very uphill.
Yeah.
And it's important to really look at that, you know?
Yeah.
But if we look at that, and if we look at the way in which we are currently living under minority rule, and if we decide that it's too hard or it's impossible to undo that, then they win.
Yeah, and we will live under minority rule permanently.
And we will live under, that's right. It will just solidify. It will become cement more and more. To your point that right now is the easiest it will ever be.
Yeah.
From now into the future of doing the work to make that not happen.
Yeah.
The longer we go in this way, the harder it will be to climb that hill.
Yeah.
But, and here's the huge but, a different future is possible.
Yeah.
We have got to engage our imaginations about what that might look like.
Mm-hmm.
And then we need to decide what it is that we are willing to do to make that happen.
And we have to imagine bigger, and we have to dream bigger, and we have to not be afraid of uncomfortable, hard situations. You know,
what do you mean by that?
Well, you know, I think part of the dynamic here is that the Republican Party in this country has been intent for the past 40 years really just on aggregating power.
Yeah.
And so that's been their focus.
Yeah.
And they have done a really great job at it. It requires a lack of morals. And so they have just dealt with people, like they have empowered people who really are kind of either amoral or immoral in nature,
right,
who will do things like, you know, like Leader McConnell has done, right?
Right.
Like just make up rules to grab power, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The Republican parties, like the politicians they elect are generally speaking people who are willing to do things like that.
Right.
You know how for like certain jobs, like you got to get the right person for the job, like you got someone who's willing to do it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like you can't be a good salesperson if you're not willing to talk to people.
Right.
Make sales, you know?
Uh-huh.
You can't be a good mafia person if you're not willing to kill people. You know what I mean? And like,
okay,
and you can't be a good Republican politician for the last 40 years if you are encumbered by morals.
Right.
Right? That's, I don't mean to sound cynical. It's just that that's a, I think, a very gentle and accurate reading of how the last four mm-hmm. decades of our country's political history have gone, mm-hmm. you know? And, you know, there are also immoral people on the Democratic side.
Sure.
Sure.
Oh my gosh.
There's
absolutely
a whole bunch of scumbags. We could name a bunch of them. Some of them have been president. You know what I mean? And like, that's how that goes. But that said, generally speaking, you know, there is a reticence on the Democratic side, it seems to me, to do bare knuckles political brawling. You know,
okay,
I think that they seem to cling to this idea that politics could be genteel, could be a gentle person's game,
right,
a gentleman's game, right? Because it's hearkening back to a time when women weren't even allowed to participate. You know,
right,
it seems like that's how old the Democratic conception of like how to engage in politics is.
Right.
Like they're doing like, you know, 1910s politics in 2020 a lot of times,
right,
it feels like. And I think that like
kind of the Charlie Brown falling yeah. for Lucy holding the football
yeah.
thing
just,
over and over
just
again.
They keep trusting.
Lucy is going to pull the football away, Charlie.
Yeah. That's exactly it, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I think we really have to wake up to the dynamics of this current situation. And that's what I mean. Like, we as people who believe in these ideals have to get comfortable with those ideas ourselves so that we can then demand them from the people who represent
us. Oh, I love it.
You know what I mean? And that's the discomfort I'm talking about. Yeah. Because I think a lot of people, and a lot of people that you and I speak with, just want people to be nice again. Mm. And just want everyone to be nice.
The ship has sailed.
And they don't want there to be conflict. And they just want everyone to play by the rules. And they don't understand that the other side has not been playing by those same rules for 40 fucking years. Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just wild. And the Charlie Brown Lucy thing is exactly accurate.
Also, you can be kind and not nice.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? Like, there's a difference. And, like, we really have a job to do to look after humanity here. And it's going to require some ruthless kindness.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's going to require us to buck up some here.
Yeah.
And
to own our power, too, you know?
Yes.
I think the Democrats have a big issue with owning the fact that they can be powerful and just letting someone else take power.
Well, you know, and, you know, we're in that, and yes, I think I agree with you. And I think, you know, we got to remember we're talking here to, you know, folks who are listening to this podcast, who are still listening. Are you still listening, by the way?
Thank you.
You know, we're
if
not...
If someone asks if you're not, watching, if someone asks if you're listening on a podcast and there's no one there listening, have you made a sound?
Like the tree in the forest.
Yeah.
That's good. So, but, you know, we're not talking to folks who are in positions of, like, they're not like elected officials, you know, for the most part.
True.
I don't know. Maybe there are some that are listening. But I'm sure that these are regular folks that our voices are reaching right now. And so how can regular folks own their power in this time? Because honestly, it's going to require all of us to show up in big and small ways.
Yeah.
You know, but first on the imagination front, on the night of RBG's passing, I read some politician, pundit types, sort of suggestions for a possible path forward. And honestly, reading these ideas and being able to imagine these things as a possible path forward was really helpful to me in that moment.
Great.
To sort of channel some of my energy.
What are they?
So, you know, first of all, we need to win the presidency in November. We need to flip the Senate in November. We need to keep the House.
No prob, so we'll just do those three things.
So immediately, those are the things that we need to do.
Yeah.
The work will continue after that, but immediately, those are the things that we need to do.
We need to have actual power.
Once that happens...
It's not undoable, by the way.
No, and we'll get there, okay? But once that happens, then we can start addressing the idea of minority rule. We can do major court reform.
Yep.
Did you know?
And not tinking around the edges, people. Major freaking scary sounding court reform.
Did you know that the number of Supreme Court justices is not outlined in the Constitution?
Hmm.
And that, in fact, the number of Supreme Court justices has changed.
Six
different times in the history of our little country.
You know the last time it changed?
When?
Slightly before, I think, before Reconstruction.
Right.
It was just before Reconstruction.
Exactly.
Which means that we have been living with the same Reconstruction era idea of what a Supreme Court should be for the last
160
years. Yeah. 160 years. Yeah. We're in 2020 right now, right?
Right.
Which is wild. That's so outdated.
Court reform.
That's like not getting your oil changed for 100 million miles.
So this is something that can be done. We need to address, you know, court reform. We need to add more people to the Supreme Court so that we can actually balance out the power grabs that Republicans have engaged in over the last many years.
Yeah.
We need to balance
out the anti-democratic power grabs.
Exactly.
That have been done for the last 40 years.
We're not trying to just grab power back and like, you know, it's not like we're wanting things to be unfair.
No.
We want things to be democratic again.
The Supreme Court.
Small d democratic.
The Supreme Court should look, generally speaking, like the country looks.
Yes.
And the country does not look 2/3 Republican.
No, it does not. The next thing we also need to attack once we have power in all branches of the legislative branch and the executive branch is that we need to extend statehood to Washington, D.C. There are currently 700,000 people living in Washington, D.C.
That's more than Wyoming.
That's
more than Vermont.
Who do not have a voting representative in Congress at all. They are not represented in Congress. That's wrong. So we need statehood for DC. There has been a lot of talk about also extending statehood to Puerto Rico. I think it's important to underline the fact that Puerto Rico ought to be the entity to decide if they want to be a state first.
And we wouldn't hold it against them if they were like, yeah, get back to us when you have your shit together.
But if they want to become a state, we need to enfranchise them. Mm-hmm. What that would
Let's do Guam too.
Let's see, if we were to make, if Puerto Rico and Washington DC were both to become states, guess who would get a couple of senators.
Puerto Rico and DC?
There would be four new senators in the Senate. There would be 104 senators, which would begin to chip away at the imbalance of power in the Senate, which would be great. What else? The popular vote compact. The Electoral College, like we said earlier, is an anti-democratic, racist vestige of slavery.
Yep.
But it's written into the Constitution.
It's a way to give rural whites outsized power.
That's what it was written to do from the beginning.
And it works.
And it still does. Here's the thing. It is written into the Constitution to change the actual law of the Electoral College itself would require a constitutional amendment, which is a massive mountain to climb and probably not one that we're going to actually achieve.
And probably
that
not
said,
a can of worms we want to open either. Because when you convene a constitutional convention, holds are barred.
Fallout problems. Yes. But there's a workaround that's been in the process of happening for a number of years now, the National Popular Vote Compact, which is a great workaround. The law around the Electoral College is that inscribed in the law is the way in which it's proportional, and that that each state, you know, sends electors to vote on the presidency,
and they get a certain number based on population.
But it also stipulates that the states get to decide how they choose those electors
and how they're allocated.
And so what can happen is currently in most states,
all but two,
whoever wins the popular vote in that state, that's the candidate that
they get all the electors from that state is what you're trying to say.
But states can do it differently. States can decide, actually, we're going to assign our electors based on not the popular vote from just our state. We're going to assign our electors based on the popular vote from the entire country. If enough states do this, then essentially what happens is that if states representing 270 or more electors do this, then essentially what we have is a workaround in which whoever wins the national popular vote will win the presidential election.
Because all of the Electoral College electors will be allocated just very simply proportionally to how the popular vote went.
It is.
So if someone won 51% of the popular vote, they would get 51% of the electors.
Exactly. So this is not that. It's not proportional. It is the National Popular Vote Compact says that a state who joins this compact will dedicate their entirety of their electors to whomever wins the national popular vote.
Got it?
So basically, what's been happening...
I'm glad you clarified that.
Sure. So what's been happening over the last number of years is, I mean, it's a brilliant idea, a brilliant workaround. There are a whole bunch of states that have already signed on. And it's not just a matter of signing on. It's a matter of passing this as legislation through the states, the state legislatures and governors signing laws that basically say, when we have enough states, 270 electors or more worth of states to be on board with this, then this law will kick in and our state will be among those that gives their electors to the winner of the national popular vote.
All the electors.
And there's something like 90-something electors to go. Like there are enough states, like 180-something electors have already... Like worth 180 something electors worth of states have already signed on to this. So we need more states to join this, which is going to require us to do work winning those state elections to get state legislatures and governorships on board with this idea as well. Again, it's all work, but it's all work that can be done. I mean, it just imagine though that we have a government installed that actually cares to work in a democratic fashion.
That cares to take note of what the people want.
The majority of the people.
Yes, and then make that happen.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is possible.
Not what the minority wants.
And we have a lot of work to do to install people in government who could actually make these things happen. We can have a functioning democracy.
Yeah.
There are so many other things like getting money out of politics, and Elizabeth Warren has an amazing plan about like how to root out corruption in government.
Yeah.
These are all things that can happen if we actually, the first step is winning the presidency in November and flipping the Senate
yep.
and keeping the House.
Yep.
So what are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
Not me, people. You. Shannon's talking to you, the
I'm
listeners.
I'm talking to all of us.
Yeah.
What are we going to do about it?
Yeah.
These are things that we can help happen. The conversation, Jamie, that you had with that woman today is one more person who's actually going to vote mm-hmm. in a state that really matters for the presidential
and she
election.
She asked me, by uh-huh. the way, she said, I don't know if this is inappropriate to ask you, but may I ask you who you're voting for? And I said, absolutely. Like, I was like, I didn't lead with that. Like,
right.
I didn't bring it up on my own because I didn't want to
sure.
violate a boundary with you.
Of course.
But since you asked, of course. And I just told her very, very bluntly, I'm voting for Joe Biden, but more to the point, I'm voting against Donald Trump.
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. And she was sympathetic to that idea, you
great.
Know?
That's
but I
great.
Think that if the sense I got from the conversation mm-hmm. was that she wasn't 100% sure of how to think, maybe didn't trust herself 100%.
Mm-hmm.
And so to hear somebody who spoke in an articulate fashion on
right.
the issues reflect back to her the idea that she'd already had in her mind felt very empowering
that's
to her.
That's great.
You know?
This is proof that your phone calls, if you decide to join phone banking,
yep.
actually make a difference.
People, we need you to join phone
we
banking.
We need you to start.
Shannon's soft pedaling this. You've got to do freaking volunteer work.
There are
work.
42 days left.
Yeah.
42 days.
By the time you hear this, it's 40
okay.
people.
Wow.
And that's not very many days, people.
So, first of all, let's imagine that things can be different.
Yes.
First of all, let's not let ourselves be taken over by cynicism or by it's too hard.
Yeah. No, we're not doomed and this isn't too hard. We just have to do the work. But here's the deal. You don't have to do all of it yourself. You just have to do your own little bit.
That's right.
Shannon and I did a 2-hour phone banking shift today. That's all we did.
Mm-hmm.
Just 2 hours. The training was the beginning of it. So really, it was about an hour on the phone. But in that hour, we, between the two of us, registered, I think, 5 people to vote.
That's right.
Holy shit.
We were one of, you know, hundreds of people who showed up at that phone bank today. And
yeah.
so add it all together and it matters.
Yeah.
Your part does matter. So we would love to help get you connected with resources.
Maybe you don't want to talk to anyone on the phone. Well, maybe text banking is for you.
Hey,
we can hook you up with that.
That's right.
Maybe you don't even want to do anything on the computer. Well, there is postcard writing.
That's
There's
right.
a big letter writing push happening this weekend. We could get you hooked up with that.
Amazing. So what we need you to do is, first of all, if you want to speak to one of us directly, feel free to message us. You
message
can
us.
Message us on Facebook if you'd like to. My email address is skc@shannoncurtis.net.
Mine is jamie@secretagentaudio.com.
Or you can also just go directly to our Let's Save Democracy group on Facebook. That's at facebook.com/groups/ Let's Save Democracy. Just request an invitation to the group and we will get you the resources that you need.
Yeah.
All right.
That's good. Do those things, people. And you know, this is a limited time offer. This isn't something you can sit around and think about and maybe do it in a few weeks or not. We have fewer than 6 weeks from
awesome.
When you hear this podcast until when this election happens.
The election is currently happening.
Well, that's a good point.
People in Wisconsin
the
already have...
Over, I should say.
Yeah, the election is already happening. People in Wisconsin and many other states already have their absentee ballots. Early voting has already started in some states, like
yep.
in-person early voting.
Yeah.
The election is currently happening.
That's right.
It will end on November 3rd.
That's right.
It's happening now, and we need all hands on deck. So bring your hands to the deck.
Yeah.
And thank you for listening to us
it.
Talk about this.
Yeah.
Again, this isn't a political podcast.
We're just two
but
people.
This is just the most important thing to be talking about right now. And
yep.
so we're really grateful that you spent your time with us. We'd love to hear your thoughts if you are a part of our Misfit Stars group.
Yep.
We'd love to hear your comments in the group.
If you're not, well, get yourself in there. MisfitStars.com/join. Honest
yes.
to God, the Misfit Stars private Facebook group is the best place on my internet right
it
now.
It really is.
It's
well, that
like,
and the Democracy Group.
The Democracy Group is also kicking butt right now. But to have like the, you know, the Democracy Group is really laser focused on volunteering. And that's great.
Yeah.
The Misfit Stars private Facebook group is where we can have all those conversations.
Mm.
I saw people start two different conversations and they're just over this weekend that said, I haven't felt comfortable sharing this widely on public Facebook yet, but I feel like I can share it here. Yeah. Let me share this with you.
Yeah.
Really vulnerable, mm-hmm. really open-hearted stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's just so great to get to show up for people like that.
It really is.
If you want to show up for people like that, if you want people to show up for you like that, get yourself in there, misfitstars.com/join. Yeah. You'll be helping me and Shannon and the work we do by getting yourself in there. It's a win-win.
Yeah. You all, thank you so much for listening today.
Mm-hmm.
Just really grateful to be here.
Yeah, same.
Thank you. We'll be back again next week with more to talk about. We'll see what that is when it comes. Goodness, what a ride. But until then, really, take good care of yourselves.
Please do. We love you guys very much.
And we will see you soon.
Not guys. People. We love you people very much.
See y'all soon.
See ya.
Bye.